You're listening to The Taylor Marshall Show, episode 48, Brain Science, Your Soul and Prayer. And I am so excited about this episode. For many years, even in grad school, I've studied this brain-mind problem, and I'm very interested in brain science and brain waves and hormones and neurotransmitters. So we're going to talk about all that in relationship to mental prayer and mental health, how understanding your brain and practicing real mental prayer is going to improve not only your mental health, but your physical health. All of this coming up in this week's episode. Howdy, and thank you for tuning in to The Taylor Marshall Show. This is the podcast for everyone who wants to create daily habits and learn enough theology to take their faith to the next level. And my goal this week is to talk to you about something that I'm just absolutely fascinated in, and that is brain science and how it relates to our hormones and sleep and mental health, but also prayer, mental prayer, meditation. And in particular, I want you to understand what is happening inside your physical brain when you are meditating, when you are engaged in mental prayer. And if you don't pray every day, this episode hopefully will show you why it's absolutely essential that you take a special time every day and pray. And when I say pray, I mean mental prayer. Some spiritual directors will call this meditation. And we'll talk about what that means in a little bit in the different kinds of prayers in this show. And then we're going to look at how our brain waves, the oscillations, the neural oscillations, change in prayer and how that relates to our mental health, our relaxation, our creativity, and a bunch of other stuff. So this is going to be, I think, a fireworks show. It might be, I don't think I've ever been this excited about one of our podcasts, so definitely stay tuned. Our proverb of the week is actually not a proverb. Occasionally, I switch this up. It's actually a psalm this week, and it goes with our featured segment. So it's Psalm 19, verse 14. It reads like this: "Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer." So we want the words of our mouth to be acceptable to God our Savior, and the meditation of my heart. Now, this implies that there already is a meditation of your heart. And so this is one of the things that we want to cultivate in our lives is a daily meditation. And I'm not talking about, you know, Buddhist Zen meditation or sitting cross-legged with your palms up and going and chanting a mantra that's meaningless or worse, a cult. I'm talking about getting connected with our Lord Jesus Christ on a daily basis and on a level that may be beyond words, beyond even symbols, something profound, something that's even better than any drug you've ever tried or anyone's ever experienced, better than alcohol or any of the pleasures in this life, being tapped in to the infinite God and being in His presence. Wow, it's amazing. All right, so let's get on with the show here. Our featured segment, Brain Science, Your Soul in Prayer. Oh, I just saw a note here. That before we get into that, I want to thank all of you. I was looking at the analytics. Every week, my assistant, Julian, posts the analytics in the show notes of the podcast. And this week, I was amazed to see that our downloads have reached over 200,000. That's right. As of today, there are 206,082 downloads to this podcast. That is absolutely stunning. I can't believe it. Thank you so much. That is a lot of downloads. I can't even, it's hard for me even to fathom this. Not only is this an exciting topic today, brain science, but just seeing that is, I mean, it blows me away. I don't know what else to say. It's crazy. I mean, it's like if my speaking agent, you know, called me and said, "Hey, there's this conference. They want you to speak at it, and it's 200,000 people." I wouldn't know what to say. And so this podcast has been an amazing apostolate. It's very rewarding for me, and I thank you so much for all of your support, all the kind comments and ratings over at iTunes, and all the people who share it with their friends. Thank you so much. We're just coming up on a year here. This is episode 48, so when we get to 52, we can celebrate a year. But it's really successful and really amazing. And when I look back on my life and I think about having been an Episcopalian minister, a priest, a clergyman, there's no way I could have ever had a congregation or a pulpit presence with something like 206,000 downloads in under a year. So thank you so much for all of you that listen. This just means the world to me. I wanted to celebrate that with you. And hey, here's to moving forward to, I don't know, maybe the next landmark is 500,000. I just thought it was is worthy to say, wow, here we are, 206,082 downloads. Thank you so much. Okay, featured segment. See, my brain science, my brain went into overload right there because I was so excited. Brain science, your soul, and prayer. Now, when it comes to prayer in the Catholic tradition, there are three kinds of prayer. The first kind, you probably remember this from your catechism days, but the first kind is vocal prayer. The second kind is mental prayer. And the third kind is contemplation. Now, vocal prayer, the first kind, is the lowest kind. And it is reciting prayers that are already composed. For example, saying the Our Father, praying the Our Father, praying a Hail Mary, praying a Glory Be, reciting the Apostles' Creed, or any prayer on the back of a saint card or prayer in a prayer book. These are vocal prayers. You don't necessarily have to use your vocal cords. It could just be said in your mind, but it's something that is more external to who you are. Now, of course, they can be internalized and brought into mental prayer contemplation, but at the very base level, you can pray in Our Father and literally say the words, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, right? But it's not something that you're composing yourself in your own mind. It's not something that's original with you. And so that moves us to the second level of prayer, which is mental prayer. And mental prayer is when we speak with our mind and make up our own prayer, our own dialogue with God. And as you can see, this is a little more personal and a little more deeper. And all of the saints had a rich mental prayer life. All the great saints who wrote on spiritual direction in the spiritual life said that everyone needs to be doing this every single day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and on that extra day in the leap year, right? We have to be doing mental prayer all the time. And I have a few quotes here. St. Teresa of Avila, great doctor of the church when it comes to prayer, says, "Mental prayer is, as I see it, simply a friendly intercourse and frequent solitary conversation with Him who, as we know, loves us." So St. Teresa says, mental prayer is just a conversation. It's a dialogue. It's like sitting in a room with Jesus Christ, our Lord, and talking to Him and listening to Him. All right? Now, St. Alphonsus Liguori says that without the aid of mental prayer, the soul cannot triumph over the forces of the demon. So when it comes to being upright, good, moral, ethical, mental prayer prepares us to triumph over evil, over the demons, over Satan. And as we look into the brain science, we'll see that there's a natural element to this and a supernatural element. Now, the third and the highest kind of prayer is contemplation. And this is a mystical expression. The saints who describe it say that it's non-symbolic. It's non-discursive. In other words, there's not a trail of words and sentences and thoughts. It's just an overload of God's presence and His love in your life. So you're not even speaking. And they sometimes compare this to the glance that a husband and wife may have for each other. Sometimes I can look at my wife. It could be total, chaos, There could be something spilled on the floor, or it could be a romantic setting. But there's a look where our eyes meet, and it says, the look says, I love you. And there's something intense and passionate about that look. This is the look in prayer where you're looking at God and God's looking at you, and there's this intense understanding that goes beyond human words and human symbols, and that's contemplation. It's rare. It's not something that you can just work yourself up into. It's a gift from God, and this is what all of us should aspire to, and we should pray that we have this gift of contemplation, to have this quiet look, this exchange with God that goes beyond human thinking, human words, human discourse, beyond dialogue. So those are the three kinds of prayers in the Christian tradition. You'll notice here that meditation applies to the second level. So when we say mental prayer, we mean meditation. And when we mean meditation, we mean mental prayer. And in the Christian tradition, meditation is not as it is in, say, Buddhism, or in transcendental meditation. The purpose there is to completely empty the soul and just have nothing there, to resist all attachment, all thought, and to kind of have a blank slate. And that's not really what we're trying to achieve, because we believe that the ground of being is personal. It's a personal God who loves us, who calls himself Father, who wants to be in a relationship with us. So our goal is not to sort of escape and find oneness or unity with the universe, or to have a solitary confinement of spirituality, but it's really to connect with God. So I'm going to be using the word meditation in place of mental prayer as we move along here. And when I say meditation, I want you just to understand mental prayer, which is this dialogue with God. And it could apply by extension to contemplation, which is, you know, the nonverbal love and attachment with God. So that's what I'm talking about here with meditation. I'm not talking about anything Eastern religion or Buddhist or anything like that, or anything you may have seen or heard on Oprah or anything like that. We're talking about Christian meditation. Okay, so that's the kind of Catholic tradition on prayer. Let's look at the brain. Now, I've been really interested in brain science, primarily because of my own brain. I notice there are times when I'm tired, when I'm aggravated, when I don't have energy, when I'm moody. There are times when I'm full of joy and excitement and full of energy, and I can accomplish many, many projects and be extremely productive. And over the years, I've noticed that it's not simply a spiritual thing. It's also a physical thing. And I've talked about this. Actually, Joy and I talked about this a few episodes ago when we talked about marriage. You know, for example, sleep is so key to human happiness. If you don't have rest and you don't let your brain rest, and by brain, I don't mean your soul. I mean your physical 3-pound organ inside of your head. If you don't let it rest and slow down, and we're actually going to take a look at the neural oscillations, the brain waves, and how it relates to our brain function. But if you don't let it rest, you're not going to have the hormonal and chemical balance that's needed for your brain to function properly. You know, just like your biceps or your quads or your pectorals or your heart, your brain is an organ and it needs a certain amount of TLC. It needs care. It means it needs to be hydrated, and it needs a certain balance. I mean, it's a very complicated organ with so many hormones. I mean, it's also an electronic machine in a sense. So it needs to be fine-tuned. And if we don't think about that and care for our brains, we're going to have some serious problems in our life. Addictions, depression, and interpersonal problems as well. So today I wanted to just introduce you to three chemicals in the brain that you need to know these terms. You need to know how these chemicals work in your brain. And I would encourage you to get on the internet or go on to Wikipedia. The Wikipedia articles on these topics are actually very well written and very good. Wikipedia can sometimes be hit or miss, but I found over the years Wikipedia is getting better and better because serious people are going in there and editing. And I think you can learn a good bit here just by Googling and going into Wikipedia and just getting kind of a basic brain 101 education. So the first thing I want to start with is dopamine. You may have heard about this. You may have read about it. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter, and it's responsible in our brain for things like pleasure, enjoyment, but primarily pleasure, enjoyment in the context of reward. And it reinforces our behavior. All right, and it can also serve as a natural amphetamine. Now, when it comes to, say, smoking, drug use, sex, or even your little iPhone in your pocket vibrating, all of those things are giving you a little dopamine boost, a little reward, a little pleasure. So when your iPhone buzzes in your pocket, it says, hey, you are important. Someone texted you. Someone called you. Someone posted a picture of you on Facebook. Someone tweeted you. Someone retweeted. However you have your notifications set up. On my phone, in order to avoid all this, I have all my notifications to off. OFF. I don't want dopamine surges related to my phone, and so I've turned them all off. Maybe you do. I would encourage you not to, and you'll probably see as we move along in this podcast why that is. But all of these things are rewarding us and giving us these little jolts, these little surges of dopamine. Now, dopamine is not bad. In fact, it's really good, and we want to have a natural dosage of dopamine in our lives. And if you have a low dopamine, here's what happens. People who have low dopamine tend to be eccentric, loners, procrastinators, codependent, and have obsessive behaviors. Also, drug addicts and alcoholics also tend to have low dopamine stores, okay, because the drugs and the alcohol are used by them to boost or to artificially replicate a natural boost. And, of course, we can realize right away that that's not a good thing. So low dopamine people have addictive personalities. And if you have an addictive personality, you may want to consider this and learn and study more about dopamine. It has to do with gambling. You can see right away that gambling is based upon a pleasure of a reward in the form of money, sometimes unexpected money, and it gives you this dopamine burst. By the way, remember, God created all of this, so there's a natural and right way for it all to work. But if you're low on dopamine, you may have an addictive personality. You may be a loner, sometimes more shy, less social. But more likely, you have a sense of low energy and just feeling burnt out all the time. And I felt this way before. It can also be associated with a low sex drive, a low libido, gaining weight, not in the form of muscle, but in the form of fat. And it's going to increase in you the stress hormone cortisol, which is really bad, and we're going to get to that in just a minute. Okay, so we don't want this. And one of the quickest ways that you can help regulate your dopamine is reduce simple sugar and simple carbohydrates, right? Because that metabolic process of the injection of sugars does affect the way dopamine is regulated. And so doctors recommend that you cut sugar or things like high fructose syrup or anything that's just very simple in its sugar, reduce it. Just get rid of it to the best you can. Okay, the next one I want to look at is a neurotransmitter called serotonin. Now, serotonin is involved with sleep and memory and many other neurological processes. And it acts also as an antidepressive, a natural antidepressive. Now, people who have low serotonin can also have a lack of motivation and be gloomy, discouraged, or depressed. Again, I've felt all those ways before. And I think all of us have felt that way before. Just because you've felt gloomy or discouraged or depressed doesn't mean you necessarily have low serotonin. Okay, these are more of a lifelong, annual feeling, not just having a bad week or a bad month, okay? So don't listen to this and be like, oh my goodness, I'm low on serotonin. I just want you to be aware of it, because as we move on, I think you'll see how it relates. And one of the best ways to boost your serotonin, according to doctors and study, is exercise. Hard cardiovascular exercise, where your heart starts pumping and your pores start sweating. And I've mentioned before on this podcast that I really think sweating on a daily basis is good for you. I think it gets rid of toxins. I think it gets your heart moving. And I think it really brings a lot of oxygen to your brain and moves things around. You know, and it gets your muscles full of oxygen and full of blood. And I think you just generally feel better and think better. And also this is related to this neurotransmitter, serotonin. Okay, so we need dopamine is related to these boosts of pleasure and joy based on reward. We want to be careful how that's regulated. And we have serotonin, which is kind of more of a continual sense of happiness. So I think if you work out, you exercise, you're positive, you pray, your serotonin level is going to be a bit higher. Now, it's not going to make you perfectly happy all the time, of course. So if you're normally a 5 or 6 on the happiness scale, maybe you'll get up to a 7 with this increase of serotonin. Now, our last term that we're going to learn here today is cortisol. And cortisol is a steroid hormone, and it's related to stress. If you are in a stressful physical situation, a survival situation, you're going to have high cortisol. If you are just stressed out at work, you're going to have high cortisol. And what this does to you is it essentially breaks down your body. It leads to muscle loss, bone loss. You lose elasticity, for example, in your skin, so you get wrinkles, gray hair. Everything that we associate with becoming older is related to cortisol. Also, becoming fat, and in particular, gaining fat around the abdomen is related to cortisol. So someone who is older and has kind of a pooch, you know, a little beer belly and wrinkles and gray hair, which happens to most of us, these are generally the effects of cortisol. So this is brought on to us by stress. And as we move on and talk about prayer and our brain, I think you'll see that by removing stress and entering into these meditative states, we are relaxing our body. We are raising our serotonin. We could even get pleasure and get a natural dopamine jolt or a reward and just reduce the tension in our body and in our brain to reduce these cortisol levels, which will, of course, make us feel younger, act younger, and look younger, right? It's going to bring about a more flourishing human experience in our lives. Okay, so those are three things. Just to review real quick, we've got dopamine, serotonin, and cortisol. Remember those three things. Do a little research on your own and learn about how through food, you know, diet, behavior, you can have a more balanced brain. Now, I find it really interesting when you look at the brain is electronic, right? There's electricity in the brain. We store thoughts there. Certain people who have brain damage in certain lobes or different part of the brain experience the loss of certain emotions, the loss of certain memories. And this sort of helps us understand and also confuses a little bit the relationship between the body and the soul. The brain is not your soul. The brain is part of your body. Your brain is part of your hardware. And the soul is distinct from the brain. The soul is immaterial. When you die and your brain rots away and bugs eat your brain in a coffin somewhere, your soul will live on, either in heaven, hell, or if it needs purification, in purgatory, right? And one day, according to Christian belief, the soul and the body will be reunited, and presumably the brain as well. So the brain is responsible for things like memory, emotion, and even things that we call the passions. And yet it's not the soul. Confusing, right? Often we use mind and brain in a way that doesn't help as well, because we'll say, oh, my mind is so tired, when in reality we probably are referring to some sort of phenomenon in the physical brain. So we can't study in science the soul. The soul is immaterial. We can't see it. We can't weigh it. We can't, you know, measure it. Can't see how long it is or how short it is. It's immaterial. We'll never be able to study the soul in that way. We can only study behavior. But we can study the physical brain. And what we've learned by studying the physical brain is that the brain as an electronic machine has different neural oscillations based on what's happening at that moment in the body. And so, for example, when we are awake, we experience what's called beta waves. Now, beta waves are from 14 to 40 hertz, and this is the brainwave activity that I'm experiencing right now. It's when you're awake, and it's when you're reasoning, and it's when you're working on problems, and you're at work, and you're having conversations, and all of those things that we must do to survive during the day. Beta brainwaves are necessary. They are good, but they can also be that voice that's nagging you, that's criticizing you, that's turning in on yourself and analyzing yourself in a negative way. And so the human person, as God created, has other levels of brain activity. Now, just below the beta waves, you have alpha waves, and these are from about 7 or 8 hertz to 14 hertz. And this is the relaxation oscillation. When you're in the alpha mode, and all of you listening have been in this mode, this brainwave state of the alpha waves, you are entering into deep relaxation. It helps if you want to bring this state onto yourself. You can do it. There's nothing wrong with it. Close your eyes and begin to have some deep breathing. And think about something lovely and true and good and beautiful. Think about God. Think about the Virgin Mary. Think about your patron saint. Think about one of the best moments you ever had with your spouse or your children. Think about those things. Breathe. Be comfortable. Close your eyes. Kind of like right before you go to sleep. And as a matter of fact, they've shown that right before you go to sleep and right after you wake up, you are in this alpha wave brain state. All right, so this is alpha. And what's good about this, if you can enter into this level, and this is where we should be going in a physiological way while we're in mental prayer or meditation, it's going to heighten your imagination, your creativity, the way you can visualize concepts, your memory, which is really important as we get older, the way you learn, and the intensity of your concentration for tasks when you're in beta waves. Remember, beta waves is when we're, you know, working, talking, fixing problems. By being in the alpha waves, we're actually preparing our brain to be better in the beta zone. Okay, so every day, if we practice mental prayer, all right, so just get comfortable. You don't need to be, you know, kneeling on stone with chains around your neck. You don't have to be, you know, ascetic. You know, lie down on a couch. What I do is in my office, I have a small office that I call it my lab. There are no windows. It's 10 by 10. It's a jail cell. I have books and papers and microphone and computer. What I do is I turn out the lights in here and I lay on the floor on my back. And I just quiet myself. I listen to my breathing and I talk to God to the best I can. And in doing that, I enter into these alpha waves. It's a period of relaxation, and it refreshes me to then move into work and, you know, write a novel, record a podcast, write a book, write a blog post, make a phone call that I don't want to make, whatever it is, do my taxes. By entering into this alpha wave zone, I'm equipping my brain and relaxing my brain, balancing my brain so that it can do the tasks in the beta zone. But wait, there's more. Okay, below alpha, so we've had beta at the top. Below that's alpha, that's relaxation. Below that, we have theta waves. These are 4 to 8 hertz. Okay, now this is going to be deeper meditation and sleeping. So when you fall asleep, and you're dreaming, and you experience what scientists call REM, rapid eye motion, you are in theta. your brain, your neural oscillations have slowed down to 4 to 8 hertz. And this is really the realm, some people would say, of the unconscious or the subconscious. It's the place of dreams, which can be very pleasant or they could be very scary. I had a dream last night that was I was kind of like in a place where I couldn't breathe. There's like fabric all around me, and I was trying to move down and get out, and it kept getting tighter and tighter and tighter, and I felt like I couldn't breathe. A very strange dream, but that was kind of a scary dream, whereas sometimes you have dreams where you're meeting amazing people and doing amazing things and flying or having a religious experience. Whatever it is, in this level, in this theta zone, you are in a more, or I should say, a less conscious zone. You could be awake and be in deep meditation, or you could be asleep and be in a dream state. I think I myself have experienced this theta zone while awake. It's a very lucid, imaginative kind of prayer. I wouldn't call it necessarily contemplation, but it's almost like a prayer where you are communicating with God, but there's no words, but there's images instead. So the way you're communicating is symbolically, but it's through imagery, through symbolic visuals, or through some sort of progress of a vision. This would be in the theta state, so completely relaxed, almost out of body. You're not aware of the physical surroundings that you're currently in at that moment. And then below theta, we get to delta waves. And delta waves are real slow. We're talking 0.5 to 4 hertz. This is deep sleep, or what some scientists call slow wave sleep. This is when you sleep so hard you don't dream. I know all of you listening have probably have experienced this. I do from time to time. You're so exhausted. This is usually, you know, when we've had sick children or traveling or an illness. You go to sleep and you wake up and you're like, whoa, I was sleeping so hard. And you have there's no memory of any kind of dreams. You can feel that your brain was almost dead for like 8 to 10 hours. This is the deep sleep waves, or delta. This only happens when you're asleep. I don't think it'd be even possible for you to be awake and experience these delta waves. It's basically hard sleeping without any imagery, dreams, or thinking whatsoever. I would like to go back for just a moment. I forgot one thing, to this theta, which is the third one down, which is sort of the deeper meditation or sleeping or dreaming or REM. I do believe when you're in this state, whether you're sleeping or whether you're awake, I've experienced it both ways, you can have great insights, religious insights. This is a place where you can learn a lot. I've been thinking of theological problems, and I actually get the insight from God in these states. Or sometimes praying the rosary, I think sometimes I can fall into this state and God can teach me something extremely important. It's almost like these light bulb moments that go off. I think, you know, the creative, I think of myself as a very creative person, and the most creative ideas I've had have come during this time. And on the blog elsewhere, I've sometimes said, you know, all the great things that I've ever learned theologically have happened usually while I'm praying the rosary. And I think because sometimes when I'm praying the rosary, I do fall into this sort of deeper meditation, this deeper dialogue with God, and I probably, my brain is falling. There's no way of knowing unless I strapped a bunch of stuff in my scalp, but my brain is falling probably into this theta zone, and I imagine that you've probably had that same experience, a really profound, deep mental prayer or meditation. Now, before I make some conclusions here, I just want to leave a caveat that all the saints say that if anyone styles themselves as an expert in mental prayer or meditation, don't believe them. Don't listen to them. So I want to distance myself from that title. I'm not an expert. I am hardly even a novice when it comes to mental prayer or meditation. It's just something that I'm very interested in, so I've read some of the literature. I myself am not a saint. I am not a deep mystic. I don't have private revelations for you or things that are going to unlock your life and just change it all in the next week. I'm not claiming any of that. What I am claiming is we can understand mental prayer, the benefits of mental prayer, in the context of neuroscience. So let's make some conclusions here. Well, we see that the brain is a dynamic organ. It's regulated by chemicals, hormones, these neurotransmitters we talked about, dopamine, serotonin. And we do know, as Catholics, that there are people who struggle with severe depression, and it's not necessarily a spiritual problem. In fact, it could be entirely physical. Just as people are born blind, people are born without the sense of hearing, some people are born without certain limbs, some people are born with a chemical imbalance in the mind. And some people are born with just lower levels of what they need to function. And we as Christians recognize this. We endorse the medical sciences. And we also, in certain cases, endorse the use of medication and antidepressants to help these people who are suffering from these natural maladies. And so because we grant all that as Christians and as Catholics, we can also grant that even amongst us who do not have clinical mental health problems, we can see that in our daily life, by the way we eat, the way we sleep, the way we exercise, and the way we pray, we can condition this physical organ called the brain. I think it's important as we make our goals for next year, and I really think we should start thinking about our goals for 2015 here in about October, November, because it's always too late when you do it on December 31st. So we need to start thinking about our goals. How will we have a more physical, a healthy physical body? We talk about that all the time. How will we have a healthier brain? Because this is going to help us to have a better emotional life, better relationships, and be more productive in those other goals that we make, whether they have to do with exercise or painting paintings or writing a book or growing your business or meeting your future spouse, or whatever it is, you need to have a healthy brain, just like you need to have healthy skin and healthy hair and a healthy stomach and all of those things, because the brain is part of your body. And because of that, it has a relationship with your spiritual life. So it would be foolish for us to say, oh, the body doesn't matter. All that matters is the soul. This is a Gnostic understanding of Christianity. All that matters is the soul, and so I'm going to abuse my brain by not drinking enough water, by not doing any cardiovascular exercise, by maybe introducing chemicals which are going to mess up the regulation of dopamine and serotonin, by doing things that stress me out, by making too many commitments, by listening to negative self-talk. All of those things are going to raise your cortisol levels, which are going to damage both your brain and your physical body. So all of these things work together, and you can see the beauty of God's handiwork in creating Adam and Eve. Because when he created humans, he created rational animals that weren't just like the other. I mean, in a sense, we have eyes and nostrils and fingernails and hair. We have bacteria living on our skin. We have bacteria living inside of us. We have all the things that animals have. We have to go to the bathroom. We have to reproduce in the same way that dogs and cats and pigs reproduce. But he also added a dignity, the dignity that the angels have, which is an intellect and a will. And he combined all that together and made human beings. And we as humans, following the virtue of prudence, need to see the balance there and to take care of that balance so that we can flourish. And this is really the life of virtue, and this is what we see in the lives of the saints. People who were able to excel at being human by the power of sanctifying grace. What was natural about them, their human nature, was perfected, healed, and elevated by grace. And sometimes that grace operates not in a way that's just like, boom, you're now sinless, or boom, you have a perfect body, or boom, your brain chemicals are all in alignment. Usually, it has to do with observation, habituation, acquiring virtue, study, knowledge, and hard work. Right? I mean, that's how the Christian life works. Very few of us have a knocked off your horse on the road of Damascus super conversion where we become an apostle in 24 hours. It takes a life of grace and of discipline to become a person of excellence. And I know all of you listening want to become persons of excellence. You want to become the best version of you because that is what God sees when he looks at you. He sees the potential of who you could become, and that makes him so happy. So agree with that plan. Say, yes, I do want to be a great person, and I am willing to study and to do what's necessary to flourish physically, spiritually, and mentally. So the closing challenge is to set aside a time of mental prayer every day. Lately, I've been breaking it up into morning and evening, and I've also been, since I've been studying this brain science, trying to situate it to when I wake up and to when I go to bed, because I know naturally I'm already in the alpha zone of brainwaves. I'm already in a relaxed state when I wake up, and I'm in a relaxed state as I get into bed and hold my wife's hand and pray and just sort of settle down for the day and for the night, examine my conscience. That's the time when I'm going to be the most relaxed and my mind's going to be most attuned to the things of God. So I would encourage you to find a time in the morning or a time in the evening to do this mental prayer. Set your alarm clock on your phone for 5 minutes or 3 minutes and try to work up to 15 minutes and talk with God. And I found sometimes using verbal communication gets me thinking about problems. And so what I've been doing lately is using images and speaking to God with images, almost like a movie. You know, picture a movie scene and you be the director and you guide the movie as you communicate with God. I hope that's helpful. Try that out. And if you have more suggestions or suggestions for the rest of our community, go to taylormarshall.com and go to weekly podcast and leave a comment here on episode 48, Brain Science. So we'll close with that and we'll move on to our tip of the week. Okay, before we move on to our tip of the week, just a few announcements. We have the Pilgrimage to the Holy Land. I'm leading a pilgrimage February 1st through the 11th in 2015. We'll be doing all the major sites and renewing our baptismal vows at the Jordan River, and we'll be doing stuff like talking about prayer over dinner and all the things that we talk about in this podcast. It's going to be an open forum all day long as we follow the footsteps of Jesus across the Holy Land and Jerusalem. So if you're interested and you want to reserve a spot, you don't have to pay. You can just reserve your spot. Go to pilgrimages.com/Taylor Marshall. pilgrimages.com/Taylor Marshall. Also, we will be opening up new spots in the new St. Thomas Institute. So if you've ever wanted to study theology or philosophy, you can take short mini classes with me at newstthomas.com. And please go over there, check out all the benefits, and we have well over a thousand students who are studying every week with these online classes with me. So go check it out, newstthomas.com. Okay, so tip of the week. A couple weeks ago, one of the tips of the week was using an audio Bible. Sometimes it's difficult to just sit with the Bible and read it for a long stretch of time, but some of us, you know, we work out. You do work out, right? Yeah, we all work out. We drive in cars, we commute. And so you can, you know, get your iPhone out or your iPod or whatever you have, an MP3 player, and listen to the Bible. The only problem is I didn't have an audio Bible to recommend at that time. Well, now I do. I've done a little research. I've tried several, most of which I found, as usual, to be disappointing. And I found one that's pretty decent. It's not perfect, but it's free and it's good. So if you can go with the Dewey Rheims, I like the Dewey Rheims translation. If you can hang with that, I just discovered that one of my favorite apps, iPietà, like the sculpture of Michelangelo at St. Peter's, iPietà, my favorite Catholic app of all time. I've been endorsing it for years. If you don't have it on your phone, get it now. Get iPietà, and in their Bible, the whole Bible's in there, Latin and English, in their Bible, it has audio versions of the books. Oh, this is so awesome. So this morning, in my mental prayer, I downloaded the book of Titus, which is short. I think it's 3 chapters, and I listened to it. It was awesome. It's really good. So if you're looking for an audio Bible, you want to get deeper in Scripture, go to iPieta, download that app, and then you can start listening to the books of the Bible right there. So that's the tip of the week. I have a gift waiting for you, taylormarshall.com, free book, Thomas Aquinas, 50 pages. And the big news is, drumroll, Augustine in 50 pages is finished. I finished writing it last week. I am so excited about it. It's Augustine in 50 pages. It's just like my book, Thomas Aquinas in 50 pages, but it's about St. Augustine of Hippo. It's a quick introduction to Augustine, his life, his theology, and his legacy, and it's only 50 pages, and it costs you nothing. It's free. It's a gift to you. Every year, I like to show my appreciation by giving away a free book or a free resource, and this year, I'm giving away this book, Augustine in 50 Pages. So head over to taylormarshall.com, sign up for your free book. All of you who have signed up already, we have over 15,000 daily subscribers at taylormarshall.com. All of you who are subscribed will automatically get this book, Augustine in 50 Pages, so don't panic. If you're already an email subscriber, you'll get the book as soon as it comes out. Within seconds of it being ready, it will be emailed to you, and you will have your own copy in PDF, so no worries. I would ask you please to subscribe to this podcast. I really appreciate all of you who have done that. It's the best way to receive this podcast every week. The podcast comes out every Wednesday. Sometimes we're a little late and it comes out on Thursday. Sometimes occasionally on Friday, but Wednesday is always the goal. If you go into iTunes and go into the search bar and search Taylor Marshall Show, this show will come up. Click on it. Just click on my face and hit the subscribe button. It's free, and every Wednesday around noon, around lunchtime, a brand new episode will automatically load into your iPhone or your iPad or your iPod, whatever iThing you use. It will automatically come in there and you'll have it. So please subscribe. Really appreciate that. And I want to thank everyone who has rated this podcast. It means so much to me. I'm constantly encouraged by your generosity. And this past week, I want to give a shout out to Junior and Junior. He or she wrote, I don't know if it's a male or female, I'm assuming it's a he. He gave a 5-star review and he wrote, "Thanks, Dr. Marshall. I really enjoy the podcast and sharing it with my friends. You have a very down-to-earth and practical style and great advice on all things Catholic. And most importantly, being a joyful Catholic in this increasingly busy and crazy world that we live in. The Catholic podcast and apps available just keep getting better and more helpful. Thanks be to God." Well, thanks be to God. I love reading that, and I really appreciate Junior and Junior, you writing that the podcast just keep getting better, because sometimes I worry, you know, am I still doing good stuff? You know, is this still like worth it? You know, I have that little nagging voice, you know, in my beta brainwaves, you know, are you good enough? Should you still be doing this? Should you be giving time to this? Do people really benefit from this? And so it's great to read those words and all the words that y'all have left. Let's see, how many? 223 5-star reviews. So thank y'all so much. And if you wouldn't mind, if you're listening to this right now and you haven't rated the show, I would ask you to do it primarily because it lifts the status of this show within iTunes. So when people Google spirituality, religion, Christianity, they'll find this podcast. And there's a lot of not so great podcasts out there. So if you want to help people find this podcast show, go into iTunes, search Taylor Marshall Show, and when you find it, click on it, leave a rating, and then just say something nice about the show. I would really, really appreciate it. Okay, so that's enough of that. Let's talk about our Latin word of the week. The Latin word of the week is cerebrum. Cerebrum. It's the Latin word for brain, right? It's the brain. Another Latin word for brain is cerebellum. Cerebellum also means brain. It can also sometimes mean intellect as well. So there you have it. The Latin word of the week, cerebrum. You've probably heard that word in science or on TV. Now you know it's just the Latin word for brain. Well, we'll close up there. I hope you learned a lot. I hope you're encouraged to learn more about these big old words like serotonin, dopamine, cortisol, alpha waves, beta waves. But most importantly, I hope that you'll take time every single day to pray, to get with Jesus Christ, to tell him all your troubles, all your joys, all the things that are on your plate, your worries about the future, what you like about your job, what you don't like about your job, your struggles with your family, the things that you think are hopeless and you're desperate about. Get with him every day, snuggle down in those alpha waves, relax, and let his soothing grace wash over you. And remember, our Lord Jesus Christ said that you are the light of the world and the salt of the earth, so go out there and be salty. Last announcement, I forgot to mention it for those of you that are still listening at this point. In the next several months, I'm going to try out what I call audible essays. These are going to be short podcasts. They'll be in this feed just like normal, but these will be shorter podcasts, maybe 5 minutes, just little bursts, little intellectual essays that maybe don't merit a whole episode, but still are something that I want to share. So if you start noticing occasionally some short podcasts, these are the audible essays. Look for them maybe towards the end of September or October. All right, thanks. God bless.